I want to come back this morning to where we began our year looking at lordship, giving God his rightful place in our lives. And if you were here on that very first Sunday of the year in January, you might just recall that when we started to have a glimpse of this subject, we went on to recognize how amazing it would be if this year of all years, Jesus in our lives was so foundational, so fundamental as to be like the bread that we eat. He's the bread of life. And like the breath that we breathe, because God is the breath of life. Well, it was amazing to be able during that first service to have a covenant service where we tried to give God his place. And we made various declarations. I've got some of the words in front of me. And we recognize we don't always get this right by a long way. So some of the words we said were that sometimes we replaced his mission with our own mission. We are often half-hearted in our fellowship sharing. And our life together isn't always witness to his love. That was part of our confession. And the response from that was to make a declaration that as, along with our fellow disciples, we would watch over each other and seek to walk together before God. Serious words. This is serious stuff. These are declarations of a commitment before God. So the question is, were they just words, or did we mean that commitment to God? Which is why we're looking at what is lordship. I want to try to represent some of the ways we can think about this with a simple diagram on the screen. And there we have me on the screen now, centre of my little universe, and all the things that I want this year to change about my particular life. So, radiating out from me are all the things that are the big bits in my life. So we have, for example, family, work, recreation, church, some of the major impacts in my life. And any one or all of those can put pressure points on our lives that cause us to have that kind of imbalance that we know isn't right in life. And then, for those of us who know the Lord, of course, there's another little block of our lives, which is the Lord himself. And being good Christians, we often would say to ourselves at the beginning of a new year, this year, I am going to make the Lord a bigger part of my life. So we'll do that. And on the screen, we'll just blow him up a bit. So there we go. The Lord is now a bigger part of our lives. Easy. If only it was. The difficulty is, I want to suggest that's a completely wrong way to look at our lives and his lordship. Because the Lord is there, but he's still placed in a box, compartmentalized, separate from all the other bits of our lives. He's separate. And we might declare that he's Lord, confess that he is Lord, believe that he is Lord, but if we don't make him Lord in all the areas of our lives, he's not Lord. Part-time lordship is not lordship. So, diagram number two. Another way of looking at it. Here's me again, center of my little universe, and all the things that are the major bits in my life. But this time, we're going to give God his rightful place and make him Lord before all. Lord in all. Lord guiding all that we do. And if 2013 is going to be a year where we are more contented, where we are less stressful, I'm going to suggest Jesus has to be Lord in all the different areas of our lives. Not just for a couple of hours when we come here on a Sunday morning for a kind of spiritual top-up. Well, these are the areas that we're going to be having a look at over the next few weeks. And this morning, the first of those, we're going to look at Jesus being Lord in the family. Actually, we're going to do this over 2 weeks. Making Jesus Lord of the family. Making Jesus real in the family. And so I'm going to bring to you three ways that I believe we can bring the Lordship of Christ into the family. And the first is we make him a presence in our families. We have to ensure that he's a significant presence. If you were to ask people in this world of ours, what is perhaps the most important part of our practical, non-spiritual life? What really matters to us? Most people probably would say the family. Family. Well, if they're so important to us, here's a question. Why would we begin to think of excluding God from our family? If he's that important. And for you, I should just explain that family might be different things to different people. For you, it might be the people who live in your particular family, house, your home at the moment, your immediate family. Family might be your children. It might be your spouse, husband. Family for you might be children who've left and are now married and are getting on with their own lives. It might be parents who you no longer live with. It could be a wider family. But whoever is your family, these are the folks I'm thinking about particularly. And I want to give particular emphasis to those members of our family who are struggling to walk with God or who don't know the Lord at all. What do you want for those members of your family? Do you want happiness? Well, that's good. It's nice that you would want happiness. That's a good goal. Do you want success? Well, fine, but success can be good and it can be bad, depending on the kind of success it is, and people handle it in very different ways. But I'm going to suggest there's something that should be so much more on your agenda for your family, and that is their spiritual condition. Jesus said in Matthew 16, what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and yet forfeits his soul? If you want Jesus to be Lord in your family, your priority should be for those who don't know the Lord. And if eternal salvation therefore matters, then the Lord's presence in the family should matter. Or is our attitude to have almost given up on that? Kind of shy away. It's a bit of an awkward thing. We don't like to talk about it. We keep God as the kind of invisible elephant in the room. You do that at your danger, at your peril. If that's your idea, that our attitude is to be like an ostrich and bury your head in the sand concerning your family and say, oh, it'll be okay, then I'm going to suggest that your eternal salvation plan for your family is wishful thinking. It'll work itself out, will it? Who's going to point them to the Lord? Who's going to pray for them if it's not you? This week, you probably heard the story, beautiful story of baby Sam. Hear about him? His mum strapped him in his little buggy, his pushchair. And this was by the pier in a place called Watchet, I think in Somerset. And as she went back to turn to the car to sort things out, a freak gust of wind blew the pushchair with Sam in it into the sea. And he's under the water for a few minutes. Naturally, Mum is utterly hysterical about the situation. And fortunately, a dock master heard her screams and went running along and then dived in and pulled Sam from being under the water. Someone gave the little baby mouth to mouth, and amazingly, this baby who had not been breathing for minutes survived. Beautiful, wonderful story. But if that's the kind of model that you're thinking of for family members, you're hoping someone will come along and rescue them, I'm going to suggest that's a dangerous kind of attitude to have. It comes down to you. I want to encourage you, commit your family to the Lord. Commit them to the Lord completely. It's your job, not other people's jobs. I wonder if they're in your prayers daily. The Apostle Paul in the book of Colossians chapter 4 said, devote yourselves to prayer. Devote. Are you devoted to your family? I'm sure you are in lots of practical ways. Are you in prayer? He also said in chapter 1 of that same book, since the day we heard about you, we've not stopped praying. That was just his church family. Do we love our families? Do we not want to pray persistently for them? Make them your spiritual priority in your life. Daily, devotedly, persistently pray for them. And many people might turn and say, hang on a sec, prayer is a bit of a difficult one. I never know what to pray. I struggle with it. Well, the great news is your family is the one thing that you are an absolute expert in. You know them better than anybody else. You know the backgrounds. You know the hang-ups. You know what they're going through, all their circumstances. I want to encourage you every day. Find an opportunity to pray for them one by one. What the circumstances are they're going through. Pray that they will know the Lord. Pray they'll know his influence. Pray that they will know his leading in their lives. That's what it is to love your family. I just mentioned, a little link here. I just mentioned baby Sam blown into the sea at Watchet. Do you know the most famous landmark at Watchet? It's a statue. Have anybody ever been to watch it? Oh, well done. I haven't. But apparently, there is a statue there, and it's a statue to the Ancient Mariner, which is a poem by Coleridge. And in that poem, there is this line, he prayeth best who loveth best. The two go together. By enveloping your family in prayer, you really show that you love them. But more importantly, even than that, you bring Christ's lordship into your family. Pray for his direction in whatever they're going through. I was talking to my father on Friday, and he just happened to mention, said, well, we prayed for you every day, as we did this morning. Pray for you every time. We know what's going on. We just pray. It's phenomenal to know that someone is there for you, praying for wisdom in all the things that you have to go through. Be that blessing to others. And then there are opportunities to introduce the Lord to the family. And I'm thinking particularly in times of crisis. How many times do we dread the thought that maybe one of our children, one of our family members will go through one of those relationship crises, just a disaster, and they need your help. Or perhaps an illness, the dreaded cancer. I am convinced you can be such a physical blessing just being there for them. Of course you can. But how much more can God be a blessing to them if you introduce him into the picture? What greater gift can you give but to introduce God, the great healer and comforter, into their circumstances? And it might just be that in those times of crisis, as people's rock, their foundation, all the things in life that they're so confident in, as they start to crumble, that's the time when maybe they ask the more important questions in life about what's really crucial. And in those situations, you might just have an opportunity gently to share your experiences, your confidence of the God who stood by you through circumstances. Pray with them and invite them to meet, therefore, with Jesus. You'd be amazed how you, with your confidence, might just embolden them to ask those deeper questions. And then making Jesus visible in the family. Making the Lord visible. You may be the only means they have of hearing and seeing the Lord. So ensure that the Lord is present through lordship in your life by making him present in your home, in your life. Jesus said, as people are asking him about how to respond to one another, that a light is not intended to be hidden under a bowl or a basket or a bushel. It should be placed on a stand where people can see it. Make sure that people in your family know your faith and see the light, which is Jesus in your life. Some simple things you might do, might think about. I hope you pray before all your meals anyway. If you don't, get into that habit. pray. Because when you pray together, if you've got family visiting you, or family that don't know the Lord, you remind them that Jesus is alive and well in your household. If visitors, other family come to your house, don't hide him away. Make sure that's what people know. You will pray in this house. And then you have an opportunity, maybe just to share something of him in that prayer. So you prayed for your food. Then, and Father, we just pray for Bill as he has that interview tomorrow. Or John, who's not too happy at the moment. We just pray that you comfort him. Something really simple. You are introducing and making visible Jesus in your family. Do you have Bibles around your home? Do you have study notes? Don't hide them away, make them visible. Put music on in the background, worship music. Make Jesus visible in your family. Do you love them? Are they a priority for you? Then give them what they need most, the Saviour. So making him a presence. The second of the points I want to look at leads on to how that witness can point them to Christ. One of the things about being a follower of Jesus and making him Lord is that as we accept him as Lord in our lives, we come to understand certain things. We come to understand that God made everything. God owns everything. And crucially, God owns you. And he also owns your family and your relationships. And therefore, you are responsible to him for those relationships. Lord, being Lord in your life means seeking to be Christ-like in the way that you behave towards one another. How on earth do we do that? Well, that's where the passage comes in that Margaret read to us, because this is God's prescription to us. His prescription. And it's a prescription for healthy family relationships. And it isn't always popular, because it involves different roles. Wives, husbands, children, fathers. And it begins, wives, submit to your husbands. My goodness, this word is not popular. Submission. We don't like it. On the contrary, today the mantra is that I do what I want to do. It is about me, me, me. That's why at the start of the year, so many New Year's resolutions, which are usually me-centered, often fail to come to the fruition. Me, my rights. And that doesn't fit into that picture. But God gives us in Ephesians a prescription that's very different. And actually it involves submission to everybody. Read the verse that comes immediately before the section that has just been read by Margaret. And it says that we should all submit to one another for the sake of Christ. But specifically here he's mentioned, wives, submit to your husbands. Sometimes that's a challenge. There's a story of a speaker at a women's club who was lecturing on marriage. And in a sort of jokey way, she asked the audience how many of them wanted to mother their husbands. And obviously not expecting anybody to respond, she was rather surprised when a woman at the back put her hand up. She said, let me get this straight. You want to mother your husband? And the woman at the back looked and said, oh, mother. No, I thought you said smother. Sadly, all too often, the behavior of husbands towards wives can give that very much more of a focus. Husbands don't deserve to be treated like this, you might say. No, nobody but Jesus does. But remember, it is his lordship that asks you to. This is part of your ministry within the family. Let me read this to you. A woman was distressed by her husband's appalling thoughtlessness. Immersed in business affairs, he seldom even remembered her birthday. "I could have tried to force him into changing his ways," she said, "but it seemed to me that this would only make matters worse. Instead, I waited for the first chance I had to praise him for some small act of thoughtfulness. And when he finally brought home a book I'd asked him four times to bring home, I thanked him as if it were a diamond necklace. He looked at me a bit oddly, but I could see that he was pleased. I did this a few more times, and gradually he began to want to think about me, because he enjoyed being appreciated." What this woman was doing was learning to submit to a husband. And in time, she changed a husband's behavior because she was doing things according to God's prescription. Notice, however, let's get clear what this submission is. It doesn't say, "Wives, obey your husbands." It doesn't say that. That might have been a very typical thing in Roman culture, so you could have understood it if Paul might have said that, but he didn't. He said, "Submit." This is not like the obedience that a child should demonstrate to their parents. Instead, this is described as like reverence. The word used at the end of that passage is respect. It's recognizing his role as head, which is modeled on Christ's position as head of the church. One of the things that is frequently quoted, sometimes by me, is that we are all equal in the eyes of the Lord. Quite true. It's the one bit that President Obama got right in his inaugural speech. But that doesn't mean that our roles towards one another are the same. Children and parents are equal in God's eyes, but nobody would sanely expect a child to have the same authority in a household as a parent. And if we're still concerned about this aspect of submission, just remember Christ. In Philippians 2:10, we read this about Jesus himself, that one day every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth because of who he is. And yet Jesus submitted his will to the Father. Lordship means following his example. And always, 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 in this passage and in the sister passage, which has identical prescription in Colossians chapter 3, Paul roots his teaching in the Lord, in reverence to the Lord, in fear of the Lord. This isn't a cultural thing, but it's an example of what is fitting to the Lord. This is lordship in the family. Please notice, however, women are not called to submit to all men, but to their own husbands. It's very specific in the passage. This is about spiritual leadership in the home, which brings us to men, and their task is to love. It's interesting that the men, the husbands, get three times as much instruction as the women. Nothing new there then. Love your wives as Christ loved the church. This is not ruling over them with a rod of iron like Victorian England might have been teaching. This is not about dominating. Love your wives as Christ loved the church. Husbands, you will spend the rest of your life trying to get this right and will fail miserably. But you need to keep trying. This is Christ-like love. Interestingly, Paul doesn't tell husbands to submit to their wives specifically. Instead, he says to them that, like Christ, they should be prepared to give themselves up for her. So how do you do that? How do you exert that kind of loving authority in the home? Well, Jesus shows us in Matthew chapter 20. Jesus called his disciples together and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. That's God's idea of showing love to your spouse. Husbands are called to be heads of household. But it isn't a position that is earned or deserved, but it is given by God. And it's a servant role. It's a self-sacrificial role. And it is to ensure a wife's well-being spiritually. I want to suggest to you that this idea of a willingness even to lay your life down could not be further removed from the idea of a tyrannical understanding of submission and authority, headship. But we go on briefly to the last section from chapter 6, which looks at some of the other members of the family. And now we look at children. Children are to obey fathers and mothers. Obedience. My goodness, the world struggles with that in our culture at the moment, doesn't it? But obedience is not something that should come to a child because the parent has worked incredibly hard to justify why the child should be obedient. We read it is because it is right, because it falls under the Lord's command. It is right that obedience is a fundamental part of children's lives. And it's closely followed by honour. And that is all about having respect for your parents, for the people who have done so much for you. And here's the thing that sometimes we might forget. Honour for your parents is for life. It doesn't end just when you stop being a child. Even when they're old and crotchety and they make demands which seem to be unreasonable and are very frustrating, still we honour our parents. It's the only command of the Ten Commandments, which is a command that comes with a promise, a command that invites and recognises that we will live long, be blessed by God if this is put into place. This is inviting your children, if you train your children to be obedient, to your grandchildren, if they are being encouraged to be obedient and to honour their parents. It is encouraging them to knock that chip off the shoulder, which is encouraged so much in society today, for young people to be quite cocky and arrogant about their own self-importance. Sorry, but a real bugbear of mine is a TV programme, Beat the Teacher, where children are encouraged to effectively belittle a teacher. How dreadful that that is a comprehensive misunderstanding of this principle. And the final part of this is, fathers, do not be harsh, provoking your children. Gentleness. Discipline is important. It is a biblical principle. God disciplines those that he loves, and parents should discipline their children. They should give them instruction, but it needs to be done gently. What we're looking at here is a prescription, God's idea of a healthy family relationship, bringing lordship into your family. And I'm going to suggest to you that in a world where these things are belittled and mocked and people say, nope, doesn't apply to me, cultural change, that's not the situation anymore. As we look around and see families that are falling apart because God's prescription for relationships are being ignored, whether it be from children or from adults, parents who don't know how to speak to one another, I want to plead with us to look at God's idea, his principle of lordship. And what we've done is we've looked at two areas this morning. how to give for your family, to give the very best that you can so that he has a presence in the household, in the family, and that you live by a prescription, tough though it may be. But next week, we're going to look at one of the really controversial, really challenging parts of this. And that is what happens when you're giving all that you possibly can to your family, but your family have expectations of you that actually cause you to be drawn away from the Lord. And next week, we'll look at priority, how we govern that difficulty of families that make such challenges that might affect his lordship over us. May God help us and guide us as we seek to be his children and to follow the example of Jesus to make him Lord in our families.